everyone, and welcome back to the Nextlander Watchcast. I am your host, Alex Navarro, and everything is exploding all the time here on the Nextlander Watchcast. We are blowing up. Well, we're blowing up. I'm going to say that right now. This podcast is blowing up, folks. Brad Shoemaker, how you doing?
That plaster didn't know what was coming for it.
Nope. Lots of things did not know what was coming for it, but in this case, most of what's coming for it is bullets. Isn't that right, Vinny Caravella?
Unlimited bullets. Do we need to reload? Hell no. Reloading's for chumps.
That's why you buy an Uzi, so you never have to reload, right?
You never have to reload ever. Also, just continually reach in your pocket. There'll be a grenade there.
Yeah.
it's there.
If you don't walk out of the house with at least three grenades in your pocket, you are not well prepared for the day.
Yeah, that's right. Or, like I said, infinite grenades.
Yeah.
You know what? Reach in that pocket, you might even have a dirt bike in there.
Look, clearly the rule is, would it be cool if this person had a grenade right now?
That's right.
Yes, then they have a grenade.
Is there ever a time when that's not the right answer?
The rule of cool definitely applies to this movie.
I think so. The film we are talking about this week is the second of our Hong Kong action films for September. And one that I've spent some time here talking up a fair amount of game about, one of my all-time favorite action films, and I think one of the best, in John Woo's late Hong Kong period action classic, Hard Boiled, starring the great Chow Yun-Fat and Tony Leung. You guys had not seen this film before, which was a little bit shocking to me, even knowing that you guys have not, you know, spent a lot of time perusing the cinematic world, but like, this is one of those ones where it's like, I remember even in the 90s, I feel like people were saying to me, no, you got to watch this shit, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Like this, I mean, before we watched any Hong Kong stuff, if you had asked me, like, what are the definitive Hong Kong movies that you've heard of? Like, this probably would have been the first thing I said.
Totally.
I've heard of it. I definitely have never seen it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you would know. I think pretty quickly you would know.
Would know, yeah.
So what did you know about this film going into it, outside of its just very basic reputation, and how much of that was gleaned from playing the 2007 video game Stranglehold?
I never played Stranglehold, but I remember it coming out, like, it was kind of a big deal, but also, like, I was working the previous beat, right? So, like, at the time, it was very obvious what games were getting a lot of marketing money pumped into them.
Yes.
And that was absolutely one of them.
Well, it's late period Midway, so, yeah. Like, they didn't have a lot of games, and when they did have games, they were usually throwing a lot of marketing dollars at it because they were really throwing a lot of good money after bad after stuff at that point. Though Stranglehold was not a bad game, it was just not the best game either.
Yeah. But, like, you know, all the common imagery, I guess there's not, like, as many doves or birds or whatever in this as I was expecting, but there's
mostly the beginning, yeah.
I mean, you get some birds.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But, like, the cliche about the white doves or whatever, but, like, plenty of guns akimbo, plenty of slow motion slides and rolls
and
leaps.
And dives. Yeah.
Lots of slow motion, like, walls exploding, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Particle effects.
Yes. This is definitely Particle Effects and Sparks, the movie. Vinny Caravella, what did you know going in?
Nothing, really. I think I was expecting... I mean, I knew of John Woo. I've seen John Woo's stuff before. I've seen
Face Off on the film stuff. In 40s back in the day.
So I've seen his more Western stuff. And I think, I don't know, for some reason really thought it was going to be much more martial arts based, but it is... gunography.
That was the one thing. Actually, that is probably the central thing I should have mentioned, is that I knew this would be a lot more guns than the martial arts that we've been doing.
It's if they strapped a gun to another like personified gun, I wouldn't be surprised. There are just guns everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That might be all the guns in Hong Kong that they used in this movie. It is a lot of guns. I will say John Woo has done hand-to-hand martial arts movies before. I mean, he got his start working for the Shaw Brothers, if you're familiar with them at all. They were one of the three big studios in Hong Kong. The Shaw Brothers, Golden Harvest, and in this case, Golden Princess, who made Hard Boiled. Those were kind of the three big studios, and Shaw Brothers are the ones that are most known for making a ton of the 70s and early 80s wuxia films that, you know, were heavily popularized and released over here with the dubs that you often hear sampled on Wu-Tang albums. So John Woo kind of got his start there working for them and started directing films in the mid-70s. But most of his stuff, especially the stuff he does with Chow Yun-fat during the 80s period, is very heavy on gun violence and not as much on hand-to-hand stuff. There's just not a lot of that in his work.
Yeah, definitely very little in this. Like, a couple spots with some kicks and stuff, but...
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of times it's kicking a gun.
Yes, kicking a gun into a place, but then a guy pulls a grenade out or a different bigger gun, and it just kind of keeps going.
You know, like, guns, or bullets are kind of like kicks that you launch with compressed explosions instead of your leg.
Sure! I mean, look, if you can put a gun in each hand and dive down a fucking stairwell, why wouldn't you do that instead of kicking a guy in the face, right?
Listen, sometimes you're diving with guns and kicking guys in the face as well. Mm-hmm. But mostly, whatever you're doing, there's a gun somewhere.
And probably a cigarette as well.
Yes. Yeah. Or a toothpick, one of the two.
Or whatever this drink is. That's got to be some kind of tequila thing, right?
Yeah, so I listened to the commentary, one of the commentary tracks that John Woo has done for this, which he did alongside Terrence Chang, the producer of the film, and he was sort of describing what that drink was. I couldn't really figure out exactly, like, the way he described it made it sound like it was a thing that maybe some people in Hong Kong were drinking at the time, where they were mixing some kind of carbonated thing with a hard beverage like vodka or tequila or something, and that's what he's drinking. It's not just like Alka-Seltzer or something.
There's some kind of slam involved. Like a playing card? It's like a playing card he puts over the top of it and kind of like has to like slam it and then drink it. It's like weird. Anyway.
It's a cool visual.
Yes, that fizzy drink, the cigarette, the clarinet.
Mm-hmm. The jazz club.
It's a whole vibe.
Yeah.
I want to get some early impressions here before we start getting into the meat of the film here, but one thing that struck me very much in this movie the first time I watched it and each ensuing time is that despite the fact that Chow Yun-fat is basically dressed like a high school science teacher through most of this movie, he is the coolest motherfucker alive in just about every scene he's in.
I definitely had that thought, like the first in the tea house, like shootout when he's leaping over stuff. I was like, those are some extremely casual, baggy, comfy clothes you were wearing for this gunfight.
He looks so comfy and so not like an action hero, but then he starts doing the coolest shit you've ever seen a guy do with two guns, and you're like, you know what? You're pulling it off.
It was at the end when he's like running in slow motion with the baby in his like khakis that I was like, oh, this is pretty goofy.
Khaki man.
Those are like trousers.
Yeah.
They're borderline like zoot suit pants or something. Look comfortable. They're just very, very puffy.
Comfy. Looks comfy.
Now, I talked up this movie a lot to you guys, and I would love to know, did it meet those expectations?
Yes. Yes. I think this is another one. We've talked about some movies like this before where it's like, I'm seeing this so late and so many things were so inspired by this.
Yes.
That like now I'm kind of retroactively filtering my impression of the source of this stuff through the things that pulled from it.
Mm-hmm.
So... there's a little bit more of an academic quality to it of like, okay, yes, The Matrix, like all the slow motion shootouts with tiles exploding everywhere that I saw later in the 90s and the 2000s pretty much were just aping this, right?
This and other, I'd say certainly other John Woo works from this time, like The Killer, Bullet in the Head, A Better Tomorrow, that kind of stuff. Like that, this is, you know, Woo isn't the only director who was doing this particular kind of kinetic gun action, but I feel like his stuff made such a stamp in the 80s and 90s that, yeah, it very much, like, inspired a ton of Hollywood stuff that came after.
Yeah, I would say, like, at its best and most striking, the, like, parts of this are, like, kind of beautiful, or there's, like, a poetic quality to the slow-mo shots of a guy flipping over a thing with, like, you know?
Yeah.
Dust and chunks of wall flying everywhere around him. Like, there's like, an almost, like, a, like... Has the phrase bullet ballet ever been used for this stuff? Because I feel like I've heard that somewhere before.
I think.
Or something like that.
I feel like these days it gets kind of applied more to stuff like The Matrix or like the John Wick, like Gun Fu type stuff. But
what's the Gun Kata movie?
Oh, Equilibrium.
Equilibrium.
Yeah. Like, but I think you're right. The way that people move in this movie when they are fighting and shooting, I think has a very dance-like quality to it at times. Like the way they spin around, the way they sort of leap over stuff and fall over stuff. And that is very much a John Woo trademark. You see that even in a lot of his Hollywood stuff. Like the stuff that happens in the warehouse and in that tea house in the beginning feels a lot like a few of the specific scenes in Face Off, where it feels like he is literally just doing covers of his own work, albeit very well. Like, the stuff he applies in the Hollywood format looks just as cool, if not cooler, than a lot of this stuff did.
Is this one of those movies that gets on lists for body counts? Like, it's
pretty high.
Feels like one of those things where it's towards the end of the movie, it has a very video game quality to it, where people are just popping out of doors to be shot. And
oh, it's
and,
Hogan's Alley shit. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
actually, I was like Mad Dog
McCree style.
I had very specific Lethal Enforcers vibes at a certain point in this, of like the way people were popping up from behind. Like, I absolutely envisioned a digitized light gun version of this movie
being played by me
in an arcade in the 90s.
It's super easy to imagine, especially whenever they do one of those shots of the front of the hospital where, like, cops are getting mowed down as they're fucking trying to climb up the wall. Patients are getting mowed down as they fucking run out of the hospital. Dudes in windows are getting fucking smoked.
Like, James Cameron definitely watched this movie, right? Because there's, like, two or three things in here that feel, like, very directly lifted for Terminator 2.
So this came out after Terminator 2.
Oh, wow.
If you're thinking about like the roses in the box thing,
there's the gun in the box, and then also the stuff at the end with the guy like up in the hospital shooting a grenade launcher down at cop cars from the window.
That felt Die Hard to me.
Those are more like, I guess those are pretty common late 80s action tropes in some cases.
Here's what I would say is that as much as this stuff definitely gets cited as the, you know, jumping off point for a lot of Hollywood action stuff, you know, John Woo and directors like him were also inspired by the stuff that was going on in Hollywood around this time, especially. And this movie in particular is very much inspired by Dirty Harry bullet style, you know, rogue cop action hero stuff. And that's not necessarily the kind of movie that John Woo was making all the time. He specifically says, I wanted this to be different from a lot of the other movies I was making at this point. I wanted it to be more of a Dirty Harry style story. And so that wasn't necessarily, like, you know, a commonality in his filmography. He also was watching a lot of those movies and being like, I want to do shit like that, but in my style.
It definitely has, like, it's got that late 80s, early 90s machismo action movie.
Yes.
This could be a Arnold Schwarzenegger milieu kind
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. Stallone.
Commando. Right, exactly. Like, just ridiculous explosions, ridiculous body counts, people just getting shot, getting back up, but then going back down if it's relevant to the plot style. Even the, like, again, diehardness of towards the end, really, when you're just in a building trying to fight your way through ridiculous odds. And then the end, the kind of like what's very like Hans, though done in a different style, like, again, like, had its own twist on it, which made it interesting.
I think Tony Leung gets shot like 17 times in this movie and somehow keeps popping back up despite it. He literally takes a shotgun to the back and seems fine.
He does, yeah. I mean, not fine.
Gray, it was a grazing shot.
Yeah.
Like, it just kind of...
just a little buckshot.
Yeah, also I was going to say, there absolutely feels like there are shotgun sequences in this where they are literally firing slugs and then buckshot from one shot to the next, depending on what they want to do.
Totally.
With the special effects.
Or flame rounds sometimes, where stuff is just getting hit and exploding into balls of flame, which is, again, I don't know, just cool as fuck. Maybe I'll go into it, but like, was like the budget for this ridiculous? Because they blow up a lot of things.
I have to imagine a lot of these big shootout sequences, they basically had one shot at them, because like setting the environment back up again after they destroyed everything would be impossible.
Well, so I mean, I'll get into just a little bit of this in the production stuff, but just up at the top here, like, some of these were on location. The tea house was a real location, but it was in a condemned building that was going to be torn down in a week, so it didn't really matter what they did there. The warehouse thing was, I think, a real warehouse, but there was a lot that they could kind of do in that empty space and kind of rework. The hospital is a set. It's on a former Coca-Cola factory that they had just turned into a film studio around the time that this movie was being shot. And so they spent 120 days just filming the hospital sequence.
I can see that.
And a lot of, and I mean, there were some things that were being done on the fly. One of the things about Hong Kong cinema in general is that most of the prolific directors of this time liked changing things and improvising things wherever they could. And John Woo in particular really liked doing this where he could. So there were things about this movie that were not in the script that ended up in the final film, including the opening sequence, which was filmed before they had a final script. Huh. They were like location scouting. They found this place, and John Woo got the idea in his head. It was like, we should do a thing here. So they got the cast together, they got the crew together, and they're just like, we're just going to film an action sequence here, and then we'll figure out how to tie it into the rest of the movie later.
Huh.
And it worked, you know? I mean, they were hassled by triads, apparently, the entire time while they were filming there, because it was in a not-great neighborhood.
Oh, like actual triads.
Yeah, like actual triads. But apparently all they wanted was, like, a little bit of protection money. So, like, five different gangs came through, they paid them off, and then they were never bothered again.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That is weird when you're making a movie about triads.
Yep. Well, so John Woo straight up says, I don't know that much about triads. I don't know a lot about them. I don't know what the deal is with them, but I know they make for really good fodder and films. And so, you know, what they're drawing on here is pretty boilerplate gangster film stuff, but he does not profess to be like an expert on like what the triad societies and gangs are actually like, other than what he's had to deal with while filming. But apparently around this time in Hong Kong, crime was pretty bad. The handover, you know, was kind of on the horizon about 7 years ahead of where they were in the production of this film. And I guess around this time, there was a pretty big crime wave in Hong Kong that was relatively bad, which was kind of what made John Woo want to do this Dirty Harry style film. Not necessarily as his swan song. I'm not sure if he knew he was going to Hollywood right after this, but he knew he wanted to do something a little bit different and a slightly different style of film from his previous stuff, though it did end up being a very stylish action film in the vein of a lot of his other films in the end. This was written primarily by Barry Wong, who I mentioned when we were doing Writing Wrongs, because he's also the writer of that, Yes, Madam, and a bunch of other like big Hong Kong films. But he did not complete the script for this film because he died before he could finish it.
Mm.
He was on vacation in Europe and had a heart attack and passed away before he had written the ending of the film. So the whole end of the movie was written by John Woo and another writer, Gordon Chan. So to just kind of give it, you know, an actual ending. And Wong had done a complete script, but they totally redid it because the original plan was to have Tony Leung's character be a psychopath who goes around poisoning babies.
What?
It was a totally different movie.
Okay.
And then so Terrence Chang, the producer, started bringing that around to like other producers and financiers. And they're like, we don't like this so much. The poisoning babies part. So they came back to and were like, we should do something different with this, which is what turned into the multiple layers of undercover cop story that they ended up with. Speaking of undercover cop stories, Tony Leung, as I mentioned, plays Along here, or Alan in the English dub, I believe. He is we haven't done anything with him yet, but Tony Leung is one of the biggest, most recognizable names in both Hong Kong and Chinese cinema. He did a bunch of movies with Wong Kar-wai that are incredibly well-regarded, like In the Mood for Love and Happy Together. And he's also in Infernal Affairs, which is the film that the Martin Scorsese Oscar-winning picture The Departed is based on.
Heard of it, yes.
So if you've seen The Departed, that is also an undercover cop thing, and it is not the same. Infernal Affairs is not exactly the same as this. It is not as much of an action movie, though it does have action in it. But it is great. And as someone who loves Marty Scorsese and thinks that The Departed might be one of his worst movies, you should watch Infernal Affairs and actually probably watch the sequels, too. They're all pretty great. Teresa Mo here is Madam Teresa Chang. This role was supposed to be for Michelle Yeoh originally.
Huh.
Oh.
But they did, in fact, rewrite a lot of that role because there was supposed to be more of a relationship drama thing happening with Chow Yun-fat in this movie, which they only kind of touch on in the final script. We have Philip Chan here as Superintendent Pang. You may remember him from Supercop. he used to be a real police inspector. It's sort of a Dennis Farina situation where he was a cop for a long time and then he became an actor. And according to him, a lot of the cop stuff you see in this movie, it really is a lot like police work in Hong Kong.
Huh.
That can't possibly be true. That what sounds like a thing you say when you're promoting a movie, not a real thing.
Right, yes. Which name one?
The part where they sing song lyrics into a computer, I think.
Yeah, where you just burn files in your trash can, maybe? I don't know.
Every time an undercover cop dies, you have your ritualistic file burning.
Yeah. In your office, in your like little trash can.
Do they not have fire alarms in that building? What are we doing?
Apparently not. I don't know. There's got to be a better way. It's a big file. You don't need to burn that whole thing.
We also have Philip Kwok, Taiwanese actor and stunt coordinator here as Mad Dog. He is a former circus acrobat and Peking opera star who eventually became an actor and stunt coordinator in the 70s. And he is a mainstay of 70s, in particular, Shaw Brothers movies like The Five Deadly Venoms, Kid with the Golden Arm, Crippled Avengers, all that kind of stuff. He was brought on to this movie specifically as a stunt coordinator, and he did a lot of the action scene coordination here. And Mad Dog was not in the script originally, but Wu loved him so much that he was like, I got to find a way to get you into this movie. Also, he did not think that Johnny Wong was enough of a physically menacing presence as the main villain. So he just on the set, he was like, you know what? You're like the henchman now. You're the guy who gets the cool Uzi that gets to blow some shit up. And so that's how he ended up in the movie. Also, speaking of Kwok and also speaking of Michelle Yeoh, he was also the Hong Kong stunts coordinator on Tomorrow Never Dies.
Okay.
So he came along to help out with those scenes. And then we have Anthony Wong here as Johnny Wong, the main bad guy. Also in Infernal Affairs. I think he's actually in all three of them. That dude has been in a lot of Hong Kong movies.
What an unbelievable sleazebag.
Oh, he's so fucking good in this, man. Just he sucks slimy. So much. Like, it's incredible. Like, he is the perfect foil for Chow Yun-Fat's endlessly cool Inspector Tequila. Man, that guy... A couple of things. One, obviously very ruthless, very scummy. Two, no villain in a movie has better highlighted the dangers of a privatized healthcare system than one Anthony Wong and his private hospital full of guns.
Yeah.
His basement guns.
His basement guns.
His secret morgue lair.
This movie is so weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
The part where it starts turning into a Bond movie with the like secret lair underneath is so weird. Like the touchpad on the morgue, the like secret construction that happened underneath. It's like a bunch of movie. It feels like a bunch of movies mushed into one like super movie.
Well,
super
again,
action movie.
By the nature of how this movie was written and put together, that kind of makes sense, especially when you realize that the whole ending was basically written after the original screenwriter died. Like. Mm. You kind of start to understand how the tonal shifts and weird mishmash things happen. But the thing is, I don't think it's really any worse for it. Like, it's not the most coherent movie, but it never takes away from the excitement of the thing. And even the parts where they do linger on the plot and sort of the, you know, machinations of the who's undercover, who's doing what to who, it's not boring, you know, like that stuff stays fairly compelling, even if when it feels a little bit frivolous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can feel free to say we'll get to it, but did they tack on an ending to this movie?
Are you talking about the boat?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Because we've watched enough of these movies where they just leave it with people dead. And then we come back and we're like, audiences didn't really love it.
I don't even think this was an audience thing. I think this was in post-production. They were just kind of like, you know, I think we want a slightly happier send-off for Tony Leung's character, which is why they ended up doing that last little shot there of him sailing away. I assume to Guam, because I think that's where they said they were going to send him after his undercover operation.
Wait, he wanted
to go to Antarctica.
To go to Antarctica, yeah. But I remember at one point he's talking to the police chief about like setting up a house in Guam for him.
I remember the Guam stuff. For some reason, I thought that was Tequila that wanted the Guam.
No, I think that was Tony Leung.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either way, it felt like, in my head, I was like, I wonder if this is one of those, people aren't happy, got to bring them back to life.
It's definitely not, we have to get Cynthia Rothrock back from Hollywood to redo this entire ending for the international market. I don't think it was quite that.
Okay.
Does Tequila have a real name in the script anywhere?
I think he has a last name. I don't think they ever give him an actual first name.
Like, that's, is that assumed to be a nickname, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, it's, it, I believe the naming convention is literally, it sounded cool.
Sure, fair.
Also, he was in The Killer, Chow Yun-Fat, and Tequila and The Killer, kinda, if you mush it together a little bit, there's a little bit of a rhyme there. Yeah, his last name is Yuen, but they don't ever give him a first name.
Okay.
I'm not even sure they actually mention the last name in the script anywhere.
Like, is Chow Yun-Fat, like, he in Hong Kong cinema considered just, like, one of the, like a idol?
Yeah,
yeah, he's a main guy.
He's huge.
He's like top up there.
Yes. Absolutely.
So is Tony Leung, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, both of these guys together, I would say, are huge stars. You know, they did not make quite the same international impact of like a Jackie Chan, but on in China and in Asia, like they are absolute superstars.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's get into the movie. Which really does kick off with quite a bang here in this tea house scene with all the damn birds everywhere. According to John Woo, that is real. A number of tea houses in around Hong Kong. I don't know if they still do, but there are like a bunch of old tea houses where people will just literally bring their birds in cages with them to those kinds of places. Don't know why. Couldn't tell you. But they do.
Why not?
Why not?
Really enhances the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into the shootout, though, we do get a little introduction to Inspector Tequila and his jazz club leanings. Jazz. Is jazz cool?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
I mean,
oh, yes.
When Chow Yun-Fat does it, yes.
That's what I'm kind of leaning toward is jazz is cooler when Chow Yun-Fat is doing it.
But I think cool comes from jazz. You can't get cool without jazz.
Jazz can be cool, let's say.
I think Daddy-o. Jazz was cool.
Ah, jazz.
I think in like the 50s and 60s, I think jazz was cool. I think jazz became less cool, but then Chow Yun-Fat revived it.
Yeah, I think jazz can still be done cool, but it can also be done pretty cheesy or...
Oh yeah. Like, look, smooth jazz is like, mm-hmm. you know, but like jazz cigarettes jazz like, is yes. still cool.
Some jazz can be a bit up its own jazz.
Hong Kong Jazz Club is a place I would still definitely go, though. I think that would be fun, especially if Chow Yun-Fat's playing clarinet. But then, yeah, we get to this opening sequence. There is a stakeout happening here. They are trying to bust a gun-running gang, but then a rival gang shows up and starts busting them up, and then it turns into a giant shootout. And this, I mean, look, Hong Kong movies don't waste a lot of time. We've learned this. But they really don't waste a lot of time here just getting you straight up into the gun-fu.
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked that the dual-fisting pistols happens in the first 5 minutes. I was like, that's got to be a thing at the end, right? Like, that's the thing people are waiting for to see, right? But no, that is just, that's standard procedure.
I mean, if anything, it is the staple of this movie's action sequence. You know, it is the fucking, it is the base. It is the rice you put, and then you just layer everything else on top of it. It is just people with dual guns all over the damn place.
Yeah, it's that's the baseline, and then like shotgun and Uzi is the upgrade.
Yeah,
and there's just birds getting wasted all over the place.
Yeah, I was a bit concerned for the birds in this.
Well, the good news is I don't think any real birds were harmed in the making of this film, as far as I could tell.
There's also some chickens in the line of fire later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this movie does not have the slow motion doves in the vein of the Face Off and the Mission Impossible 2, but you know, John Woo likes him some birds is a thing that I can just say outright here.
Well, you know, it's cool to have a thing.
Yeah. And he has several things, and they're all fairly cool, I feel like. But this, I mean, look, this sequence, you know, a lot of people die, a lot of people get gunned down. I feel like the first time I watched this, it was a little hard to parse in terms of, like, who is getting killed, who's an undercover cop, and who isn't.
Yeah.
But as I've gone back and watched this film over time, I think I've got a better lay of it. It is a little frantic in the beginning in trying to piece together, other than Chow Yun-Fat and his partner, it's a little hard sometimes to piece together who's exactly on what side.
It's the Strider guy in the corner, right? They keep making eyes at. He winds up being the undercover cop.
Yes, he was. But he was working for a rival gang, but he was undercover.
Oh, well done. You're such an asset. Give the guy a gun and he's Superman. Give him two and he's God. Do you know who you just killed inside there? One of my key witnesses. I've hunted this jerk for a long time. I wanted him alive, though, and I nearly had him. And thanks to you, I'll never have him.
You know, listen, when I played Sleeping Dogs, I made some comments about how cavalier that game was about your undercover cop just shooting cops on the regular. And I may have been a little harsh on that front because it kind of feels like maybe actually no one there really cares if their cops are shooting other cops.
Look, you got to do anything to remain undercover.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is also the part where Chow Yun-Fat has a toothpick in his mouth and is smoking a cigarette at the same time.
Yes.
Like it is, he is hard boiled.
He does kind of lose the cigarette at a certain point, but the toothpick never dips. It's always in his mouth during this scene.
It's ridiculous. They are really going for something.
And the shot of him at the end covered in the flour and then covered in the blood of the guy he just decided to execute.
Uh-huh.
It's a real haunting visual.
What actually instigates this whole fight? Why is one of the people working at the tea house part of the rival gang that smacks the birdcage with the teapot?
The way it's described is that a rival gang decides to raid them while they are doing their deal.
Okay.
It does just kind of kick off, though. You're not wrong.
Yeah, I've got the distinct impression that the movie does not care that much.
Okay. We just need a reason to go.
We just need an anything excuse to start a big gun battle.
Sure, okay.
And you get your token shot here of tequila going down the rails as well, which becomes one of the signature moves in Stranglehold. It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff.
Well,
it's in a movie that kind of continues to up its action scenes in both length and number of guns in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a strong start to what will end at absolute, Gunageddon. You start pretty high, like, okay, there's a lot going on here, and this movie just crosses over into the abyss.
Also just seems like standard format of like every Hong Kong movie we've watched starts like wastes zero time getting into a giant ass action scene.
My understanding is that Chinese audiences don't want to wait around for their action. They just want that shit like the second they sit down, which I totally understand and respect.
I get it.
I don't want to waste time either.
It's effective. You know, you can do your setup later.
Yeah.
And we also, we established that nobody needs to reload. You only need to reload when it's plot critical.
Yeah.
You'll only run out of bullets when you need to run out of bullets.
Yeah. And of course, like the least surprising piece of character building ever, you find out that Tequila is a loose cannon who is jeopardizing the investigation by pulling this shit.
And also now has a motivation for revenge now that his partner has been killed in the process of this whole thing.
And then cut immediately to a police funeral. Like, it all feels like extreme undercover cop cliche shit.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there's saxophone playing under that police funeral as well. So
there absolutely is.
When did Lethal Weapon come out? Is that the late 80s?
That was 87?
Okay. I mean, we've got a couple of things before this then where we've got our kind of renegade rogue cop, like you said, Harry and all this stuff. And it just feels like almost a pastiche, you know, like a bit of a just like, all right, yeah, throw it all in there. I'm surprised he's not ready for retirement or his partner wasn't. You know, 2 days from retirement.
Yeah, but you know what Lethal Weapon doesn't have? John Woo running a jazz club.
It's true.
Oh, is that him?
That's him.
Okay, I was like, just was looking at him, trying to think, like, where have I seen this guy before? They keep using him as this like sage-like figure, or the voice of reason, or something. And I was like, this guy's got to be a guy. I can't place him, but that, there you go.
Mr. Woo, pity. What is it? That we didn't nail these jerks. You've changed, Tequila. You were so sensitive in cadet college. Now you're so hard. Too hard now? They're even harder. had a good friend in him.
We can't have everything in life.
And then they have him reprise sort of that role in Stranglehold, where he's the guy that, like, sells you stuff in that game. Okay. Like, he's sort of the shopkeeper. And sure. It's literally just a model of John Woo. But that this is another character that did not exist in the script. This was a thing they came to midway through the movie, and they were like, Chow Yun-Fat was like, my character doesn't really have enough, like, history and motivation. I want someone who is sort of like a, you know, kind of a guiding figure for him in the movie somewhere. And John, you should be that guiding figure. And, you know, they'd worked together a bunch at that point, so I get it. So that's how that character ended up in the movie. John Woo by trade, not usually an actor, but, you know, he's got a good rapport with Chow Yun-Fat, if nothing else.
It works here. This is a person who comes in once in a while and says, like, needs you to get out.
Vaguely sage things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't die on the job.
Yeah. Don't do what Tony Leung is doing, which is getting too deep, man. Getting too undercover. Getting too in the weeds with his undercover operation where he's literally assassinating people.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, to be fair, this guy's like a shithead arms dealer.
Oh, he's not a good guy, but still.
That he offs here, but yeah, I did not see that. I did not see the turn coming. Like they definitely sell him as a cold-blooded hitman here for quite a while.
Alan, Uncle Hoi wants to know why you betrayed him. Listen, I didn't betray him, honestly.
Yeah, you did.
Like, this scene, more than any other in this movie, feels like something that John Wick just stole, which is, like, the, you know, him wandering through the library, finding the gun inside the Shakespeare book, and having his big, you know, fucking melodramatic assassination of this guy who betrayed the gun runner that he works for, and then the blood fucking seeping around the book. Like, oh, it's so good.
My favorite part of all of that, I mean, it's a fun little scene for what it is. My favorite part is when he finally goes back and there's the one guy in the background being like, I put the gun in the book!
I did that!
I did that!
I did that for you!
What did you think of that? It's pretty, pretty cool, huh?
Uh-huh!
And it was like, you know what? That was pretty cool. I guess that was all right. But what is, like, Chow Yun-Fat's, like, detective vision? I don't know. How does he find the book? I know
he's
the
just
book
that good.
Is sticking out. Yeah,
he's just that good.
Right. That's,
he
yeah.
sees a big book. Like, he sees the blood trail. He sees roughly the size of the book.
Uh-huh.
I love him showing up to this murder scene eating a McDonald's sausage biscuit.
He's hard boiled, man.
Hungry. You know, you gotta eat.
And yeah, just kind of like finds the book. He sees it sticking out eventually, but finds it in the rack. Books.
Check them out.
Book. Don't or don't.
Yeah.
Not if you want to live.
But this is, you know, kind of our like little tour through the mundane lives of these characters. You know, Tequila is doing his detective vision and hanging out in his jazz club. Tony Leung is on his houseboat, another fucking amazing cliche for undercover cops, and making his paper cranes for
Again,
all the
very very lethal weapon to
cliche
me.
On cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A paper crane for every body he has on his count.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the slice of life stuff, I feel like, in the police station maybe does not work as well for me as the rest of the movie, but I do think that the weird code they do with the song lyrics is one of the best dumb things I've ever seen in an action movie. It's so fucking dumb.
It's really silly.
So are you sick, then? And what's with all these?
I'm sick, all right.
Is it a broken heart? Play your cards right and I'll come back.
Just wonderful. So then I can hang around for more years hoping you grow up.
I didn't know you liked white roses.
Well, you wouldn't.
You never told me.
Huh. Well, I never told him either, but he's more interested in me than you are. Listen to him.
He asks if you're lonely and do you need a man for anything.
I can read. I just want a tune, thanks.
Are you somewhere feeling lonely?
Or someone's loving you? Thank you. Mi so la so so fa fa mi 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 re re ti re do.
Not re re. La la ti re do.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nothing. I've got the things you left behind. Want them? Your underwear.
She seems to be pretty happy with the flowers.
Really?
Didn't know she liked roses.
You better send her some of your own.
If she's good, I will.
What is this?
Miss Ola.
Are you somewhere feeling lonely?
Thank you.
Welcome. Tone deaf and dumb.
Miss Ola, so far.
Miss Ola, so far. Lion near trap. The investigation.
It's look, they're all amazing musicians. So they could just kind of sound that out and figure out where it is on the chart there.
They just love their pop music. But yeah, the way Tony Leung apparently communicates with his superiors is to send white roses to Teresa Moe's character with a song lyric, which she then has to sound out the notes of, then pass off to her boss, who then punches the notes with a numerical association into a computer that just spits out words.
What is that? Solfege? Is that what that is? The do, re, mi, fa, sol, la.
I don't know.
That's where they're going with that. What is it? No, it's la.
Yeah,
it's
that's a fa. That's not a la.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very silly. I don't really have much else to say about that. It's very silly.
I was kind of confused. I didn't know if Tyrone Fatt's character was joking around that they were like dating or not. But by the end of the movie, I got that they were actually had been dating and they were on the rocks. I thought it was like maybe just banter in the office. Like, oh, who's sending you roses? Your other boyfriend? Mm-hmm. Da, 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 da. But I guess they had a relationship that's rocky.
Well, there was a lot. Again, at one time, there was more of a relationship in the script for those characters, and they kind of excised that stuff over time and made it more of just a, you know, maybe they're kind of on again, off again, whatever. You know, it's not really that important to what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's like, she won't marry me if I don't buy my own place, and like he seems like he's definitely casting a side eye at all these flowers she keeps getting.
Also, like, look, he says it at some point, but this is a bad undercover scheme. Like, you need to throw these roses away. You need to not just start collecting flowers in your office. There's got to be a better way. Throw them away.
Yes.
It's not the most well thought out.
No, but, you know, I mean, she likes the flowers.
It's visually very effective.
Yeah.
If you're making a movie, it's good. What is Teresa's character? She's
a madam. She's an inspector.
So she's an inspector. She's a boss here.
I don't think she's the boss. I mean, that's the superintendent, but like she is a fairly high ranking police officer.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, even though she's not really doing action stuff like the way that like a Michelle Yeoh or Cynthia Rothrock would in these movies, they don't treat her like, you know, she's a delicate flower or anything. Like she's there when they're doing the hospital stuff. Like they kind of, she's in the mix at least.
There is a yes, madam later in the movie. I didn't know if that was just a thing that happens in the script or if that's a reference.
I think that's just a thing that you'd say, like, you know,
you would just say
female police, like high ranking officers are just known as madam. So,
okay. Yeah.
And this is where we kind of get a little bit more of like what's going on with Tony Leung's various identities and, you know, associations. He's working for this older gunrunner. Who kind of is maybe thinking about retirement, but, you know, hasn't really made any commitments in that regard. This other dude, Little Ko, who is some kind of, you know, informant, snitch, backstabbing guy who kind of plays all sides. He wants him to go talk to Johnny, who is this other younger gunrunner who seems to have a little bit more of a leg up on things, mostly through ruthlessness. And you kind of get the sense that, like, hey, Tony Leung's character here really does not want to betray this older gunrunner, but also he recognizes that the real shit is happening over here on Johnny's crew.
Well, they also go out of their way to sledgehammer home this kind of older mobster who's like, loyalty. That's the thing that matters.
These
loyalty.
Guys are like my sons.
That's right. I'm going to peel them all peaches, and we're just going to enjoy these outside Godfather style because I'm old school and loyalty, and that's the thing that matters in the old school triad system. And it seems like the new school is ruthlessness and making money.
I'm an old timer, and I know that respect and face are vital. I'm old fashioned.
It works, though. We respect you.
Alan, if I did something bad, how would you treat me?
There's worse guys than you around. It's just an idea. Why not go and check out Hawaii? You might really like it. Perhaps you could stay. You could have a new home, maybe.
I was born in this place and I'll die here. Alan, I've got responsibilities. Can't just pack up and leave.
I thought you might like it.
Hey, how you doing, boys?
Hey, I'm fine.
Hey, Uncle
Hoy. Hello.
Hey, you want a smoke?
No, later. Be alert to this little Leo. Right. You can never trust him.
My apologies. Here, nothing in my hands.
Yeah, mine are full.
Yes. Hey, Alan.
Here you go.
What? What's up?
It's Johnny. Says he wants a word.
No, Johnny does not give a fuck about loyalty or anything except for loyalty to him, and he is very willing to do anything he can to become the most powerful gunrunner and I assume just overall gangster in Hong Kong, including bringing Ah Long into the fold here, but not, you know, not for nothing. Like, he's got to kind of prove himself a little bit to kind of find his way into this organization. And that will eventually involve killing his boss.
Right, I'll be frank. I like your style. You happy with old Hoy?
Yeah, I am.
Alan, you should set your sights high. With your talents, you should be making big bucks. My arms business is real money. It's worldwide. Where there's war, there's Johnny. Most things will go in and out of style. That is, except war, my friend. When I say real money, I mean it.
Everyone knows you have the Midas touch.
Will I have you as well?
If Uncle Hoy's alive, I'm loyal to him.
Loyal to him? Good, I like loyalty. I paid out a fortune to get that Jimmy working on my side. And he brought a lot of potential business with him. You wasted him with one bullet. Ability like that is thin on the ground. I forgive you.
Well, I respect honesty. But I came here today to get to know you. I'm not here to discuss business.
So? You got it. And I still like your style.
After some massive killing.
Well, yes.
Aside, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, look, it's not that like he's the only person that has to die. A lot of people have to die in this.
A lot of dirt bikes will need to
die. Yes. Yeah, they really don't waste as much time setting up this gangster clash.
No.
Like, it's basically practically the next scene after all that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit here. There's the stuff where Chow Yun-Fat shows up at the whatever like club they were dining at and has like put newspaper headlines all over their cars about the cop who was killed in the shootout, his partner, and they have a little confrontation about it, though Tony Leung is very good at making sure that he does not, you know, get this cop killed in the process. And then there's a little bit of Chow Yun-Fat fishing off the bay and talking to Little Ko, which is... You know, look, man has many interests. Jazz, fishing, tequila. He's a well-rounded individual.
Yeah. And some more strife where the chief tries to kick tequila off the case.
Two cops had their gun stolen. Check it out. And just lay off the gun running job. Okay. I've spent God knows how many hours working on this bloody case. And you tell me to lay off! You shut up! And just get on with it, right? Maybe you'd like to do an encore. Enjoy the performance! This is my office. Show me some respect.
This may be your goddamn office, Tequila. The whole station's mine, though, so you listen! This is a fucking order!
You know, you're really just full of shit. There's the John. Okay?
Kind of understandably so, given what's going on here, but also, maybe if you're gonna send a guy into deep cover like this... And you have a guy like Tequila working a case like this, maybe plan it out a little better so that the twain never meet, because this is not going to go well as soon as Tequila decides he's on a murder bender.
Yeah, is this where he tries to give him, like, somebody's gun went missing. Why don't you just go find that?
Yeah.
You're off the case. Tequila. If you got a cop named Tequila, you better know that guy's going to chase down whatever lead. If you have a cop named Tequila, you're in trouble. If you have a cop named Tequila whose partner was killed, forget it.
Yeah.
You might as well just give him all the guns.
No fucking chance.
No chance.
And yes, that does lead into the warehouse fight. But before we get to that, we got to take a quick break. So we will be right back. And we are back, and folks, let's blow some shit up.
Yeah, everything.
Like a whole warehouse.
Let's come in swinging from the rafters by ourselves against, like, maybe 50 or 60 dudes with guns.
Well, before we do that, though, we need the 50 or 60 dudes with guns to roll in on motorcycles and just massacre all these guys who are making sparks for a living. I mean, look, it's a chop shop. It's very clearly a chop shop and also a place where they are doing drug stuff, it's a crime factory.
It's a crime factory, yes. It is like a video game, like one of those evil villain layer things where you're putting down modules and be like, what's this one? It's a cocaine lab. Okay, yep. And so if I can fit this next to the chop shop over here, I've got 4 squares left. Maybe I can just put in torture room? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's got some chemical storage here in the middle.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't buy the DLC, so I can't put the airplane hangar next to it where they're building crime planes.
It's just ridiculous.
Also, the raid is literally the dudes riding around in a circle on dirt bikes, just shooting everything and making it all blow up.
Yes.
It's like a dozen dudes on motorcycles with Uzis. Some of them have silencers, some don't. Doesn't really matter because there's no point in silencing anything here.
No.
And a lot of it is Mad Dog just doing the illest shit you've ever fucking seen in your life, like fucking ramming a motorcycle into a guy, hopping on it, off of it, and then just Uzi-ing another guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that part was ridiculous.
Not a lot of injuries to report on this film, though I will say that Philip Kwok came very, very close to getting burned after that grenade explosion, which apparently John Woo made.
You see it.
Yeah. So, John Woo apparently made that explosion about 3 times bigger than it was originally supposed to be and failed to tell Philip Kwok beforehand. So his hair got singed, but no actual damage.
I saw in that shot, the flame bellowing out of the window looks like it, like, grazes him.
Yep.
Kind of.
It's the one where he tosses the 2 into, like, the little office, like, the little, the room?
Yes, the 2 grenades into the office, and the 3 guys blow up in there.
Man. There is... And then... They destroy this place.
No, it's great, and, like, it's really thoughtfully edited. Like, there's some good long cuts in there, but, like, it is, you know, I mean, it's obviously not all done in one take or anything, but the way they will sometimes linger on certain shots is, like, the camera's swooping down, and just dudes are blowing up and fucking exploding. Like, it feels like a theme park ride at a certain point, right?
Yeah.
Like, the way they shoot it and the way it feels, it's like you're at the Universal Studios tour, and this is the part where the guys start launching off the balconies.
Totally. Or again, like an arcade light gun game.
Yes. And it's so good. It's not even the end of it, because that's the first half.
Yeah.
The first half is this massacre, and then the old crime boss shows up. Fucking Johnny's like, you gotta go kill this guy. Do it for, you know, just do it. So he shows up. Most of his guys get massacred on the way in, and then it's like, there's another standoff.
Can I just mention this interstitial between fights here where Mad Dog lights a cigarette by leaning down over, like, a burning wreckage and sticking his face in it?
There are 2 or 3 shots in this movie where I'm going to say the guy doing the thing in the shot is the coolest they have ever looked, and that is definitely the coolest I have ever seen Philip Kwok look. So good.
He's a hard-looking motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine that guy is an acrobat. I feel like he was destined to be a henchman in films and just a hard-looking motherfucker in movies.
Although there's an interesting turn with his character later in contrast to how steely and frightening he looks.
Totally. He does have a code. It's not much of one, but it is a code. Before we get to any of that, though, it's time to massacre the old man and his surrogate sons.
Uncle Hoy, why are your weapons down there? Maybe surrendering or scared to death?
Bastard!
Oh! Stop it, idiot! Cool it! Put your effing guns down!
Idiots! Stop it! Johnny. I die, that's fine. But surely you don't have to kill all my boys.
Johnny, he's right. Why waste any bullets on shit?
It's up to you this time. Whatever you want, the choice is yours.
Johnny! You're a smart guy. I'd like to talk to Alan alone. Yes or no?
Uncle Hoy, you'll need more than words.
No. Everything changes. It isn't always pleasant either. And there isn't always choice. Like Hawaii. I didn't go because I knew this day would come. Someone had to sell me up to him. I read you all wrong, though. An error of judgment. One of those things. Please, release the guys. Look, I'm happy to die. But not by the hands of that bunch of rotten goat shit! I want you to shoot me, Alan!
Shoot you?
Shoot me! Go on, do it! Finish the job! There's no way out! Either you kill me or I kill you!
And then eventually Detective Tequila, after several minutes of loading a shotgun, finally decides to rappel down and introduce himself.
Infinite shells into that shotgun the entire time. Look, reloading, we know from video games, reloading a shotgun, very long. You gotta... Mm-hmm. I did like this scene where he kills his boss, and his boss is like, look, I knew this day was gonna come. You're an asshole. You betrayed me. I bet on the wrong person, but better you killing me than that other asshole, so we might as well do it. Just do it.
Just spare my men, you know?
Yeah, and he doesn't.
Which they don't.
Which,
I mean...
I guess he's... I don't know. Maybe no witnesses? I don't know.
Well, it's a couple of things. One, I have to imagine he knows that if these guys survive, they will probably be captured and tortured by these other gunrunners.
Hmm.
He also doesn't necessarily want people coming after him for his betrayal, which does end up happening because he doesn't manage to kill every single one of them. But I imagine in his mind, it's like, look, I've got to just tie this loose end off. So
yeah,
I'm killing this one man. Might as well kill everyone.
And he's got to prove himself to Johnny and like embed himself with the new gang.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of paper cranes.
So many paper cranes. That's at least three nights of work right there.
Yeah.
But, you know, he kills them all, and then in comes Chow Yun-Fat like a fucking wrecking ball.
Just to further shoot up this same warehouse that has already been shot up and blown up quite a bit.
But with panache still, you know, like when he shows up, it doesn't feel like, okay, we're still here. It's like, oh, we're doing a whole other thing now.
This was definitely what made me realize we are just fully in the realm of, like, kind of quasi-superhero stuff with the swing...
Mm-hmm.
From the ceiling while firing, and also again just the one dude going up against about 50. It's like, well, all right, this guy's untouchable.
I mean, this is 100% the most Schwarzenegger shit that he does in this movie. He is rappelling down from a ceiling with a submachine gun and killing 75 guys at once.
Yeah.
Who are all just exploding from nothing, you know? Like, it's just everything is exploding. It doesn't matter where he's aiming the gun, everything is exploding.
If you touch a motorcycle, it will turn into a fireball.
Totally. And there's some, like, I'm going to say, like, as much as Philip Kwok and Chow Yun-Fat are really doing the lion's share of the work here, there are some really good stunts from, like, the minor guys in the background here. Guys doing back bumps, head bumps, neck bumps all over the place while they're getting shot up. Like, this is a really impressive stunt movie.
Yeah. I mean, and I think you guys just mentioned it in terms of people getting possibly singed. A lot is sparking and blowing up constantly while everybody's doing their stuff. It's not just, you know, jumping. It's jumping out of the way of explosions.
Mm-hmm. And just narrowly avoiding stuff on a near constant basis.
A lot of debris. All the debris.
And all this happens in the first 45 minutes of a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
All of this.
Yeah, when I was watching this, I almost thought this was the finale, and then I looked at the runtime and was like, there's another hour of movie?
They don't end movies like that, man. There's all kinds of stuff. Like, you gotta have more back and forth with the angry police inspector. You gotta have more time in the jazz club. You got to figure out that, you know, you got to get Tequila and Ah Long together. You know, they have to be unlikely partners, you know, despite their differences. You got to have a big dumb gunfight on a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta build up to the reveal. I mean, I guess we're not that far off from the reveal, but like you see the Tony Leung character like screaming on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that's the first hint that he's not who he says he is. Right.
Well, we get this, we get them the face off with the two guns, where he lets them go. Right.
Yes.
He doesn't kill Chad. Right. Fats,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the first moment where I really started questioning his motivations, because everything prior to that could be read as him just, like, you know, reluctant to betray his old boss.
I'm gonna be real, I totally clocked him as an undercover cop, like, the first time, like, in the first scene that dude showed up. And I'm not just talking about this watch, the first time I watched this movie, I was like, he's undercover, right? Like, there's too many knowing looks from Tony Leung in this movie, where it's like, oh man, I'm tortured about this. Mm. Oh, I'm thinking a little too hard about this. And it's like, that's undercover cop every single time.
It's fair. Yeah, I could see it now. I didn't at the time when I was watching it. I thought maybe he had a conscience, like, you know, because they set it up where he didn't want to do this betrayal. I thought maybe he was just kind of didn't want to do it the whole time. I wasn't sure.
It read as, I'm in too deep, man. Yeah. That was very much my feel of it. And I mean, look, by this point, this is where they just reveal it. Like, he meets up with the police captain at the boatyard and, yeah, like, just straight up, like, it is, hey, check it out, I'm undercover.
You got a guy called Vodka?
Vodka? Tequila.
Tequila!
A heavy-duty cop. I don't give a shit what he is. Tell him to back off, will you? I don't want hassles. That man will wreck everything. You want another funeral in the department?
Point taken. I'll stop him.
And get that export license. Johnny doesn't do that shipment, and I don't find out where his depot's located.
Just give me a day, okay? Customs are a snip. Be cool, all right? You'll get what you want.
What about my Swiss bank account?
Buttoned up.
And what about the house in Guam?
Hmm.
Does it have a walled garden?
I'm not playing this game. If you don't want to do this job, you're free to quit.
And live where? You just stay real. See you. What's up, don't trust me? You know I always deliver the goods, Superintendent.
It's your birthday. Forget. Present.
I had forgotten. So busy being a gangster. I don't know which me is real. Hey, and you're the only guy that remembered it anyhow.
Don't forget that.
Cool boat.
Yeah. I like his little houseboat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this little action sequence they do around it. There's some good choreography here of, like, who's popping up here, who's shooting who, who's fighting who. Like, it's got a good dynamic to it.
The shotgun blast down through the deck is pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. That's where he gets the buckshot in the back, yeah. Which, again, this is where shotguns sort of, like, have different functions here in this movie. Like, in this one, he gets a little bit of a, you know, just a little bit of blood on the back, whereas another shotgun blast a little bit later basically kills 7 dudes at once and also blows up the entire wall behind him.
Uh-huh.
It, not necessarily a lot of logical through line, but hey, what are you going to do?
Blow everything up, apparently.
Yes.
Continue to blow everything up.
But yeah, this is where Chow Yun-fat and Tony Leung kind of form their uneasy alliance, though it, you know, at this point, like, we really are just barreling toward the hospital here.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to remember what happens between the boat reveal and the hospital, because the hospital is pretty long.
Yeah,
well, Chow Yun-fat, like, dives in the water, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of good diving into water. I mean, along taking the shot to the back is kind of how you were introduced to the idea that Johnny Wong runs this hospital somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, yes, because
he takes him there, yeah, and he's like, hey, this is my hospital.
That's right. It's my hospital. Let's keep no record of this, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, I'm going to say it right now, as ruthless and terrible as this is, Johnny has a point. No one would expect to look for a fucking gangster's gun cache in the basement of a hospital.
I was going to say, of all the front businesses you could have for your gun running operation, I would not have expected a hospital.
Okay, you're right, but also big risk, big reward. When it goes wrong, boy, does this one go wrong in a way that maybe is hard to back away from, because now your guns are in the bottom of a hospital. Mm-hmm. Not the most defensible position also.
Well, the basement is, not necessarily the rest of the place.
No. And the body count kind of escalates.
And I'll say, I mean, he's clearly thought of this, because his mind is that if anything ever happens here, I'm going to take all these sick people hostage.
And sure, kind of does. I'm not really.
Yeah, there's a real, I mean, we'll get into it more, but there's a real nihilism or kind of a going for broke quality as things escalate here at a certain point. Like, at a certain point, it's like, what are you even trying to accomplish here? Like, you seem like you just want to kill everybody now out of spite.
Well, that's what when they get to the stuff with Mad Dog and sort of his vague code, like, that's the thing that sort of sets him off, is the fact that, like, look, I'm a killer. I'm a dude that will do dirty shit, you know, for money. But, like, why are we just gunning down all these innocent people and fucking babies? Like, what are we doing here?
That seems to be his respect for the work, is that he will kill cops and other gangsters all day long, but killing innocent people is a bridge too far.
Like, it's pointless to him.
I think maybe we skipped the bar. We're getting up to the part where it's little Ko gets his ass beat.
Yeah, that's kind of the last thing that brings everything into the hospital, which I guess you don't leave the hospital again after that.
Not really, no.
Yeah, they clock him as a snitch and beat the shit out of him, and I totally missed the part where Along, like, sticks the lighter in his pocket while he's beating him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he shoots him, magically apparently manages to hit the lighter.
Just the lighter.
The man is a crack shot, knows exactly where he's putting that bullet, and he does it.
Yeah.
The lighter was something that was given to him by the police captain at some point.
For
as
his
like
birthday.
A,
you
know,
yeah.
Yeah, for his birthday. So yes. That's the significance there. But doesn't really come into play other than as a, by the way, that this guy didn't die kind of thing.
He stays alive long enough to get us into the hospital.
Yeah, he gets it soon enough.
But yeah, from here, like, literally the last 58 minutes or so of this movie takes place in the hospital to some degree. And the setup for it takes a while. You know, like, they have to get everyone in the same place. So they've got Lil Ko there. They've got, you know, the Teresa shows up at one point. She sees them wheeling in stretchers full of, I'm going to say, either guns or drugs or both. And then at some point, the police captain shows up pretending to be a doctor.
It's got a whole undercover,
he's got an undercover cadre in there.
Yeah, that are all various, like, hitman style levels of disguise embedded.
And then at some point, Tequila and Along meet up in the hospital, and they decide that they're going to go and try and suss out where the hidden guns and all the crime stuff is happening in the hospital. And that takes a while. Like, they go down to this basement, and it takes a while for them to finally figure where all this stuff is. They have to defeat this incredibly dastardly lock system that they have to get into the secret morgue by pressing two buttons.
Yeah, it's a real strong security system they have there.
Well, they do have to figure out where the empty morgue sliders are, and they do, but once they do, it's literally just like, beep, beep. Oh, secret lair.
but then,
well, that gets you into the entryway, but then there's a real door to defeat.
Yeah.
A very long sequence.
I was really surprised how long that sequence went of them trying to get that door open, and also that the tension between them kind of felt like it came out of nowhere and was not necessarily deserved.
You mean the sort of, like, I'm going to be the one to solve this? No, I'm going to be the one to solve this tension?
Well, it's more like, I forget who starts sniping at whom, but, like, they just start complaining at each other about not being able to get the door open, and, like, I don't know, I'm looking for some of the dialogue, but they kind of go at each other for a little bit here.
There's this thing where Tony Long's character is like, hey, man, this is super serious.
Mm-hmm.
And Giant Fat's character goes from joking to being like, I'm not joking. Be like, you're kind of not taking
this. You're a little bit of a joke.
You're kind of not taking this as seriously as he is. Like,
yeah, I found it. You know, he's just like, what's the matter? You can't open the door, you know? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like they just start sort of grousing at each other in a way that felt like it was out of left field.
Motherfucker. Great idea. Throw a tantrum. Always opens doors.
You do it. Go on. Why are you such a dickhead? This isn't even your case. It's got Sweet F.A. to do with you.
I don't agree. In my opinion, at this stage, it has everything to do with me. If every cop was as self-important as you, Hong Kong would be dead. Why not stop looking to blame? Let me open the door!
Well, I don't ever really get the sense that they, like one another, even in the earlier stuff where they sort of form their uneasy alliance, but I think this is more of just, like, a, you know, who's the better, more capable cop type stuff. But, you know, it doesn't last super long here, because eventually they find a way to blow their way through the door, but it takes a while, you're right, it does.
And it kind of doesn't ridiculous. Work, and then...
This whole ridiculous conceit of stuffing the gunpowder in the pipe and then shooting it.
And that doesn't even really work.
Yeah, just exposes some then he just, like, electrocutes himself to open the door, and, like, eventually...
What if I jam this other wire into the other wire that you just blew up, and somehow that's gonna open the thing?
Yeah.
It feels like some real, I am just trying to screenwrite my way out of this scene as soon as possible type stuff.
At this point, is everybody on to everybody? Like, everybody knows what the deal is with everybody. There's no more undercover. There's no more, like, is the whole
Johnny
world
doesn't
exposed?
Know that Ah Long has betrayed him yet.
Okay.
Yeah, that comes later over the closed circuit camera. Yeah.
Okay, that's when they find out over the
he sees
the
him.
Okay.
Yeah. He sees him in the vault.
But also, just about everyone else in the movie knows about Ah Long at this point and knows kind of, like, what's going on in this hospital to some degree.
Right, because Teresa Moe knows, right? She knows because she's got the roses now, right?
Yes.
And Chang Yun Fat slips the rose in her pocket. Why doesn't he just tell him to evacuate the hospital now? I guess maybe let Johnny know?
Buy him some time, yeah.
He just wanted some time to get down there and do his thing.
It'll take her a little while to find this.
It's like a little sleight of hand, though. Yeah. I mean, again, it's maybe not the most efficient way to deal with that situation. Because, again, as soon as they start trying to get the patients out of there, it's going to alert the bad guys.
Yes. And Lil' Co is now, he's dead by the time
we're
in the basement.
Yeah, he's been gone for a bit here. Like, everybody knows about the basement lair now.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, they now know that the cops are down there because Mad Dog goes down there and finds them rifling through their guns.
Yeah,
and it's kind of all put on the table at this point because the entire rest of the movie is basically one nonstop gunfight.
More or less, yeah.
And so you got to make room set the table for that.
And the table setting is, like, one of the only, like, significant hand-to-hand scenes in this movie, which is the Philip Kwok and Ah Long and Chow Yun-Fat, like, the part where Chow Yun-Fat just starts punching Philip Kwok in the fucking eye patch that he has on from when he got burned in the fucking, in the warehouse is pretty good. There's a part where Philip Kwok just starts fucking, like, clobbering dudes in the stomach with an AK-47 over and over again.
Like, I was gonna say, even when they go to hand-to-hand combat in this, they're mostly hitting each other with guns.
Yes! It's beautiful, is what it is.
Look, there is a certain clarity of focus to this.
And in this case, you know, like, Quap kind of just says it. It's like, look, man, I don't like cops. And I don't like dogs who betray their masters. You're both.
That's right.
So he's on the shit list.
And then they're trying to evacuate this hospital, and there's this weird, like, back and forth of... Can't evacuate the hospital. I'm not evacuating the hospital. You better evacuate the hospital. And then somebody pulls the fire alarm, right? Teresa pulls the fire alarm.
Yeah, Teresa does.
Yeah. And then it's just chaos. And then it's just chaos.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think I ever say it explicitly, but I'm pretty sure the doctor is doing this because he is under the direct employ of Johnny and not just because he's an idiot. You know, obviously the security guards that work there are just thugs for Johnny, but I think the main hospital staff probably also knows what's really going on there.
But it is pandemonium. We got shots of people in surgery. We get to see the maternity ward. We get to see people run outside and then are mowed down as they're running outside. It is just...
Johnny is just slapping dudes across the face, saying, fucking, you know, get those patients back in here.
It's like, I don't know what's going on here. We've lost control of the situation.
Oh, yeah, because as soon as people start pouring out of that hospital, they just start getting shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the point where I was just like, okay, I don't even know what the motivations are here anymore. I guess it doesn't matter.
Well, the motivation is he wants them to not run away because they're his hostages, and so he's going to kill as many people as he can to prevent them from doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if you kill your hostages, they're not hostages anymore. But sure.
But there's a lot of people in that hospital, so yeah, the thing fair. Is, if you lose a few, you yeah, can still fair. Keep the other ones in there.
Fair.
But everything is happening in this hospital at once. People are like the shots of people just jumping around the steps, people going into labor. It's just
the whole baby, the whole nursery thing starts popping off.
But then we start getting also some of the undercover cops that were like, there's the one guy who's in the surgery room, right? Who
yep.
like who pops a guy.
Yes, the shooting the guy in the middle of the surgery was pretty good.
Yeah. And
there's a lot here. Like while this is going on, fucking Tequila and Along are just like grabbing C4 off the walls and just like strapping up with every gun they can. There's this whole bit with, like the stuff in the sort of foyer where like there's all those sick patients there that are sort of being held alongside the police captain and Teresa.
That part felt very Die Hard to me. With
yes.
Like, you know, cause eventually they find a cop, right? They find a
yes.
cop. That, yeah.
Well, so the security guard happens upon Along and Tequila. They take out the security guard, take his uniform, and pretend
right.
like Along has captured Tequila, and that is sort of their subterfuge to clear out this area.
This whole thing. So it's many people get killed.
Like, trying to go beat by beat for this is wild, because, again, it is like an hour, or at least, I'm going to say at least a 45-minute long action sequence with about 15 minutes of setup.
It's impossible. You can just mention some highlights, but it is like, I couldn't even... guess how many bullets are fired and how many people die in this extended sequence. I really have to give a shout out to their emergence from the underground lair back through the the slots where the bodies go in the morgue.
Oh, mm-hmm.
They both just come like rocketing out of there.
Yes.
Yep.
Sliding on their chest.
Shooting four or five guys at a time.
People as they go.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but
because like when they cut to that, like I was like, this room is full of guys with guns. How are they going to get through these little cubby holes and get out and not get shot as they wriggle their way out of there? Oh, okay.
Just launch yourself.
And there's just like every shot of like them moving through the hallways and just like taking out guy, then guy, then guy, then guy. Like it just keeps going. It's really well choreographed, I have to say. Like just everything about this fight is. It's hectic as hell, but maybe where I did not have I had a little bit of a legibility problem with that opening scene. I don't think I've ever really had much of that here. And the confusion when it does happen is sort of intentional, like when Ah Long accidentally shoots one of the undercover guys who just pops up like he's one of the other fucking Hogan's Alley villains in this.
Yeah.
He was my favorite undercover guy.
Yeah, he was nice. Unfortunately.
There's also this extremely uncomfortable repeated, attempt to lower the babies in the bassinets out of the window as the guys
like four times.
Holding them are getting shot.
Yes.
It's like, please don't drop those babies on the pavement, please.
Like every time they cut to the outside and there's like SWAT dudes like trying to climb up and capture the babies or whatever, like new guys start showing up in the windows with different submachine guns to kill them.
Yeah, these SWAT guys in their SWAT ski masks are like also straight out of, I feel like, some video game or like, you know, narc style, which just put on a ski mask and go, but you're the good guy ski masks.
I don't know that I've ever actually played a video game though that pulled off an action sequence this fucking cool before. Like
no.
There's a lot of cool gun battles in video games, but this to me, I mean, when I talk about why this movie is one of the best action movies of all time, at least in my view, it's this. It's this entire 45-minute ending, because there just isn't that much that goes for this long, this hard, that I've ever seen.
No, this movie just keeps the pedal down and keeps on killing people. long after you got the, like, okay, no, no, we get it. These people in this hospital are toast, and they're just mowing down patients and threatening babies and just ratcheting it up.
Yeah, which, like, as far as the baby stuff, the cotton ball in the ear stuff is amazing. That's all it takes. They'll just sleep right through the gun battle now. It's cool.
How about a little nursery rap? Rock my baby in a cup. When the gun fires, the baby will drop. When the game's over, the baby will fall down to his mommy and daddy and all. Last little sprout, I've really got no doubt, we'll get safely out. I know I can't sing, so stop pretending, little Willy Wing. Hey, X-rated action.
So that is a shot that, not exactly, but like 85% of it is reused in Face Off. Because there's that gun battle, Vinny, you probably remember, in the guy's penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the toddler that is there. And so instead of cotton balls, he puts a pair of headphones on him. And When You Wish Upon a Star is playing while this gun ballet is happening.
Interesting. Okay.
And they cut out all the other audio except for the song. So they there's a few things in some of his Hollywood stuff that he reuses from his Hong Kong days, and this is one of them.
I knew that I had seen the movie poster imagery of him and the baby, so I knew there was going to be a baby thing with Saliva Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
What a name!
That whole little monologue is pretty amazing.
What a drooly baby!
Yeah. But then, yeah, as far as people getting gunned down, like, it leads right up to this kind of final face-off between Mad Dog and Ah Long, where, like, there is some respect there, you know? Like, they actually, it's like a good tense moment where they both kind of silently agree to put their guns down to try to wave all the civilians out of the room before they try to kill each other again.
And they don't really get to have their final confrontation.
And they never know, but that's because Johnny comes in and proves what a complete and utter piece of shit he is by just gunning down all the people that they had just tried to safely usher out.
Yep. And just with a fucking shit-eating grimace on his face, like, yeah, fuck all you. Mm-hmm. Just, like, Uzi's all these sick people.
Yeah, and then Mad Dog would actually just kill Johnny right then and there if he weren't the only one in this entire movie unfortunate enough to run out of bullets.
You only run out of bullets when you have to run out of bullets.
It's true. And I'm just, you know, look, I mean, Mad Dog is definitely not the most well-rounded character in this movie, but I felt like his face turn was not unearned. Like,
yeah, no, it absolutely. Like, as I mean, he definitely has done a lot of shitty things, but yeah, to turn on the actual sleazebag when he does is, like, sort of respectable.
And I think this is the first appearance of that giant automatic shotgun with the fucking, like, you know, round, like, Tommy gun barrel thing.
Yeah, is that like a bullpup or something like that? What do you call that thing?
I truly don't know what that gun is called. I think the more modern versions of it are literally just sort of like an automatic shotgun, but, like, it's, you know, it's just a drum magazine that has, like, a bunch of big fucking heavy shots in it. My understanding is that a lot of the guns from this movie were brought in from London. Because I'm not sure that they had this much gun diversity in Hong Kong at this time, so they went and got a bunch of fancy shit from London.
Nobody's got this much guns. Look, maybe the U.S., but, like, you know, maybe it's more expensive.
Like, all the guns in Hong Kong are in this hospital basement.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so you go straight from that whole exchange to Johnny threatening to blow up the hospital.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of scenes of Chow Yun-Fat running in slow motion away from flames holding a baby.
Uh-huh.
There's also the baby peeing on his leg to put out the flames thing, which is a fun goof, but...
You saved the day there, you little piss pot. Thanks a lot.
The thing I was going to say, though, like, it's never shown... Like, it's Ah Long and Johnny up in the top floor alone. It's never, like, shown how Johnny gets Ah Long in a compromised position, right?
No.
Like... Okay, they gloss over that part.
Yeah, they gloss over it because, I mean, I will say the shot of him turning, of Tony Leung turning around, and he's got, like, glass in his face, and he gives that little smile of, like, I'm gonna go do my hero shit. That's great, and I love that it results in him actually getting his ass kicked and showing back up later in the compromised position, as you put it. It's like, no, I'm gonna go be the hero. Nope. Nope. You don't actually get to go be the hero, sorry.
Shards of glass in him.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, this bit, yes, we have Chow Yun-Fat running in his baggy khakis with a baby under the arm as things keep blowing up behind him, and somehow he gets to a place where there's a little pause in the explosion so he can grab a wire and just fucking dangle his ass out the window.
Yeah, that's
this is
exactly
cool as
what
fuck,
happens.
Man. This is the coolest shit.
With
to
the
put
baby.
It in Dan Riker terms, this is cool guy shit.
I mean, it definitely is, and there's a lot of fire and fake babies, and it's all right.
Yeah. That baby is fine. He pees at the right time. He drools at the right time. He's no worse for the wear. They find the right parents for him eventually, so it's all good. He gets home. I don't know, man. This whole, like, as a crescendo to this insane last 40 minutes of movie, you couldn't ask for a lot more.
It's a lot of explosions.
It's a lot of explosions. Like the frame, I mean, they've been throwing that C4 around for a while.
Yeah.
The frame is just pretty consistently orange for about two straight minutes.
Yeah.
They have that timer, or they have something blipping on all that C4 the entire time, which is like...
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You just need to know this is C4 with something on it.
Yeah, that's all that really matters here. That and Johnny getting to do his weird little humiliation fetish routine at the end here, which is...
take your pants off.
I don't know what you're really expecting to get out of this.
The hard-boiled cop. You made it. Each side's lost some guys. We're about even so far. But when I kill this one, I win. Do it! Go ahead. Watch me blow his head off.
Don't shoot.
It's like you're impotent. I thought you were some kind of super cop, but you're just a man like all the rest. Slap yourself. Now your left cheek. Jesus said. Say you're impotent.
I'm impotent!
On your knees. Put your gun down. Hey, whoever gets a chance to fuck around like this, huh? 38. Now take your pants off, cop.
Bastard. Eat shit.
Take your pants off. Now take your
Neil,
pants off.
Tell me I'm impotent. Say you're impotent. Say it.
Yeah, slap yourself.
Yeah. He does say the line, though. He does say the titular line at the end of this. The hard-boiled cop.
Yeah. It's good.
But then he dies.
Johnny's a sick fuck, all right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Johnny's a sick fuck, and he dies.
He knows he's beaten. How is he going to get out of this one?
Yeah, I don't think he had much interest in winning. Yeah. I think he was just... he wants to kill as many people on the way out as possible.
That's where it seemed like it turned hard in that direction at some point.
Yeah.
Relatively early on.
And you think, oh no, did Johnny get along? Is he dead? They're burning the file at the end. That must mean he's dead, right?
You gotta mention Along's shoots himself through the stomach to take out Johnny.
He does the speed thing before speed.
Shoot the witness.
Shoot the hostage.
Yeah, shoot the hostage. That was a flesh wound. Yeah. Yes, is he done? Definitely, yes. This is a Hong Kong movie. I'm surprised Chow Yun-Fat's character made it out alive. Oh. Roll credits.
Johnny gets one right through the eye.
Oh my gosh.
As someone who has just been playing Mortal Kombat 1, and there's that bit where you learn how Kenshi loses his eyes in that one, this is not as bad as that, but it's pretty bad.
It's pretty grotesque.
Pretty gnarly. And yes, we think Ah Long has passed. Things, you know, life in Hong Kong police starts to return to some sort of sad normal. But folks, he's okay! He's on a boat!
Just make... Throw those paper cranes in the water.
Going anywhere. Probably Guam.
That's it.
That's it. That's the movie.
The end.
Cut to excellent credits music.
In memory of Barry Wong.
This movie's got some pretty good music.
It does, yeah. I think the soundtrack is really solid.
Was there ever a sequel?
No. Well, Stranglehold. Right? The Stranglehold.
Yeah.
That's
yes,
it.
Yes, the official Stranglehold was, in fact, the official sequel.
Yeah.
The marketing stressed that over and over.
And I'm... Look, here's the thing. I had fun with Stranglehold. I ended up reviewing that game, I think, near the end of my GameSpot tenure there. And there's... It recreates some of the things from this movie that you would really like, which is to say a lot of bullets flying everywhere, a lot of slow-motion diving... and, you know, rolling down rails, like basically rail sliding with a dude instead of a skateboard. But it's also a pretty thin video game, and I remember thinking, like, I beat this very quickly, and it was not really that hard. And it was not the financial success that Midway was hoping for, unfortunately.
I'm not sure anything could have saved Midway at that point, but yeah.
They were trying to spend their way out of their problem, and it did not work.
7 out of 10.
Yeah, that's, you know, again... Some great visuals, some great action, pretty thin. Unlike this movie, which is a feast.
Yeah, it's it is all the action.
It is.
It is all
it is so much action.
Yes, I'm glad I've seen it. I'm glad I know what it is and can identify all the references and et cetera, et cetera.
Do you want to do you think you'll ever want to see it again?
Maybe. I don't know. I was thinking about it, and where I land on the Hong Kong stuff we've seen so far is I am definitely way further to the martial arts hand-to-hand end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of things that just gets me fired up to watch, like, I think there's some, and even with stuff like The Raid, obviously, not even from Hong Kong, but just as another example, like, there's so much room for, like, creative choreography and athleticism with the martial arts stuff. Where, like, the gun battle stuff can be very cool and sort of beautiful in some ways, but it ends up running together a little more for me.
Yeah, I get that.
When there's a lot of it.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think for me, I'm with you in that I always find great hand-to-hand fights more dynamic and more exciting than great gun battles, but as someone who was largely raised on the Schwarzenegger-Stallone canon in the 80s, there's just always going to be a place in my heart for a million things exploding while everyone is shooting Uzis. Like, that's just a thing that I'm never going to be able to detach myself from.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but this, I think I just really appreciate how far this movie is willing to go.
Yes.
Like, it's like a couple of movies built into one.
This movie doesn't care about too far.
No. You know.
Well, and especially as John Woo's final, you know, entry from this era in Hong Kong before he jetted off to Hollywood to start making Jean-Claude Van Damme and Nicolas Cage movies. I mean, if you want to say, like, this is my definitive statement on what I did in this territory in this film industry, yeah, you can't make too many better final statements than this, I think.
No, he used up every squib in Hong Kong and had to go to another country to find some more.
Imported only the finest submachine guns from overseas to make sure that he got the exact guns he needed for this.
I'm putting this one. This one's going to sit near on my list. I'm putting it above Predator, which is high praise.
That is very high praise.
It's high praise because I really like Predator. But below The Raid and Assault on Precinct 13. Because I think I like those in terms of the action. I still really like The Raid. I don't know, something about The Raid.
The Raid's
amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Assault on Precinct 13 has, like, a kind of more subdued, like, mellow action that I really like, too. But The Raid, Hardboiled does it, but The Raid just, I don't know. The Raid's up there, man.
The Raid is very hard to top. I agree.
But could you have The Raid without a Hardboiled? Maybe. I don't know. It's an escalation.
I do feel like that spate of Indonesian action cinema certainly owes a certain amount to, you know, the Hong Kong era that came before it, but it's its own thing.
It's
its own thing. It takes some of the cinematic flavor from that stuff, but their martial arts style and their delivery is totally their own. And I think that is what makes that stuff stand out so much.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like, there's a kind of, I don't know. There's also a bit of the superhero stuff in the raid, but this feels a little more Western flavored superhero. At least I think, like you, Alex, I came from a lot of Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, Rambo stuff. Mm-hmm. And this feels a little bit more like that and a little less like some of the other Hong Kong stuff we've seen where, with the main character, but it's a lot of fun. And if people like me, first time seeing it, it feels like a piece that needs to be in the,
oh yeah,
in the puzzle.
If you care about action cinema at all, it's a thing that I think you have to see at some point.
Yeah, seminal.
Yeah.
Extremely clear.
Well, that's going to wrap up our current entry into Hong Kong action cinema. I'm sure we will revisit the genre at some point down the road, but we knocked out some bangers this year, so we'll probably take a little breather before we try to come back to this genre. Especially because next month is the spooky month.
Ooh.
Can't do action cinema in October. That's when the horror happens.
The spooky, the horror, the thriller, if you will. Halloween. What do we have on tap? Or what genre are we going for aside from just the horror?
What I can tell you is that we have not worked out the full schedule as of this recording for what will be shown in the month of October, but the theme is going to be, by necessity to a certain degree, but also because these are going to be great films, foreign horror, because the strike's not over yet.
But I love it, because I feel like that is absolutely a blank spot for me. I mean, I've seen some Japanese horror, but not a lot.
So what have you seen from the J horror stuff?
I'm trying to think if I saw the original Ring, like
Ringu.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I have. I feel like I've seen more Western stuff based off of Japanese stuff. More like,
well, yeah,
like the Grudge style,
the Grudge, yeah. Dark Water.
Yeah,
all those were remake. Like there was a spate of those remakes between like the late '90s and mid 2000s. There was a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Like so Pulse, Cairo,
I feel like I've seen more of that than the actual original stuff.
I will say The Ring, the U.S. version, is one of the only ones of those remakes I would say is almost as good as the original. And so we will do something from Japan in this lineup. Again, I've not fully worked out the entire schedule yet, but I can tell you what we're going to do next week, what we're going to lead off with. And our first film in the foreign horror category is going to be from the United Kingdom, where they found all those cool guns. It is a movie that I think is really interesting and pretty good for what it is, but it's kind of a weird phenomenon in the UK. It's called Ghost Watch.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to say too much about what's going on here, except to say that it was broadcast in the UK as a television special and purported to be real.
That's
it is not.
Okay. Oh, well, spoilers.
Well, it's not. Okay. It's a movie. Okay. They're not real ghosts, Vinny. Come on.
So a little like War of the Worlds style.
Well, War of the Worlds and also a little bit of sort of the Blair Witch thing of it is a kind of news style presentation of a haunting that was broadcast in the UK. And it was so at the time believable that people freaked the fuck out when it aired, and in fact it did not ever air again as far as I know in the UK because of that. It was eventually put out on home video, but there was a whole thing around this movie and its presentation initially, and it kind of took the UK by storm for a little bit there.
Very cool. Okay.
So that is going to be next week. I will post the full schedule of what we are doing in the month of October over on the Patreon the week that this episode you are listening to right now goes live. So look out for that. But Ghost Watch will be our very first film for foreign horror.
Love it. Thank you.
It's going to be a good one, I think. So look for all that, as again, on the Patreon. Look for the full list and of the movies we're going to be watching. And as always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening and watching along at home with us. We'll see you next time.